You're going to write a novel. You've been pondering the title for years, dreaming about what the front cover might look like with your name on it. But when it comes to sitting down and actually writing the thing, well, you end up cleaning the house, reorganising the shed, doing anything but the task itself. Putting off and procrastinating about a goal is just one way that you might self-sabotage. And we do it all the time, in relationships, at work. Somehow you prevent yourself from getting what you want. So, how do you stop? Charlotte Keating is a psychologist and adjunct research fellow at Swinburne University of Technology. Charlotte, first of all, expand a bit more on what I've said about what self-sabotage is and how it manifests.
Amanda, it's really any action that gets in the way of really what we want. It's pretty common. You know, I think it's a normal behaviour that many of us engage in. It can be things like sort of derailing a healthy living plan by, you know, sort of tearing apart the refrigerator at home. It can be, in fact, self-soothing in times of stress with alcohol or drugs. But it can be, as you described, sort of procrastination around getting particular jobs done that end up just hanging on your shoulders.
Yeah. So it is that sort of cutting off your nose to spite your face, I suppose.
Yeah. It is.
Are there particular kinds of people or personality types who are most susceptible to self-sabotage, would you say?
Look, it doesn't actually discriminate, Amanda. You can perhaps imagine that some people who are perhaps anxious in their disposition or worry or fret or fear the outcome of situations, be it work or relationships, may be more prone to perhaps sabotage or create a negative outcome. But it can also be the case that people who are really confident and in positions of even power and authority are just as prone to it as well because of the pressure that they can feel under to perform in situations and the fear of failure that can sort of amount. And they too are prone to self-sabotage.
And is that sort of at the base of it in a lot of ways, fear of failure?
It often is. It's driven by a belief system very much of the time that might be about a fear of failure. It might be a fear of not being able to meet the mark, not being good enough, not having done enough work. Usually that it's a range of negative beliefs that can really get in the way of you being able to just find your calm in the moment to move forward and progress.
Well, one of the best examples of a fictional character I can think of who's a self-saboteur is Bridget Jones, as in Bridget Jones' Diary. Now, the self-sabotage that she does, it's to comic effect, but it is also very relatable, I think. You know, she really wants to get it together, but she can't. There's big promises that she makes to herself around, you know, losing weight, stopping smoking, drinking less, and finding the right partner. We've got a clip from the film. This is where Bridget's at a Christmas party and her parents are trying to set her up with the lovely Mark Darcy.
Maybe this was the mysterious Mr. Wright I'd been waiting my whole life to meet.
Do you remember Bridget?
Maybe not.
She used to run around your lawn with no clothes on, remember?
No, not as such.
So,
are
you staying at your parents' for New Year?
Yes. You?
Oh, no. I was in London at a party last night, so I'm afraid I'm a bit hungover. Wish I could be lying with my head in the toilet like all normal people. New Year's resolution, drink less. Oh, and quit smoking. Up. And keep New Year's resolutions.
The awkward Bridget Jones from the first of the Bridget Jones movies saying all the wrong things. And it's true, Charlotte, I think that, you know, when you want to impress, you can morph into this person who says and does the exact wrong thing.
Absolutely. And I think Bridget is probably a relatable example for many of us in that we can set ourselves these extraordinary goals across all areas of our lives and often they're pretty extreme and we expect them to all happen at once. But I think the clip depicts a really good example of what it is to feel under pressure and stress and how that sort of stress and that emotion in the moment can lead us to say the very things that we're really willing ourselves not to say, and she does. And so, you know, in those sorts of situations, it's how can you actually take a few breaths to settle and anchor and really sort of just engage in that conversation in the way that you would rather like to.
Yeah. But where do these sort of self-defeating behaviours come from? do you reckon?
Look, I think moving slightly away from Bridget's example in that case, but certainly how Bridget tries to relate to Mr. Darcy and you know, all of these different areas in her life. When it comes to relationships, oftentimes we can, when we start out and we're young, we develop sort of a sense of relating to our parents. And the way we relate to our parents can, in fact, set up a bit of a platform.
In that clip, actually, her parents are in it. So
they are,
and they're trying to set her up
with Mr. Darcy,
aren't they? That's right. So they're pressing all her buttons.
So all of the triggers are probably occurring in that environment that she's sort of a bit used to in her childhood sense. So if we set up sort of a way of relating to our parents that can sometimes feel a bit unpredictable or insecure, then this way of relating to people can set up a bit of a platform for the rest of our lives and our relationships and, you know, in the workplace or intimately. And so if it is that we've formed an insecure one, it can feel very normal when we find ourselves behaving in the same way or, in fact, seeking the same sorts of relationships later in life. The contrary, of course, is that if we feel quite secure in our relationships with our parents, we often have a platform then of feeling a little bit more secure in ourselves, and we seek out the same sort of feeling or dynamic in relationships in the future.
I wonder, though, just coming back to the example I used at the start of wanting to write a novel, knowing you've got this novel in you but you can't get it out, I wonder if it is also sometimes just to do with setting an unachievable goal for yourself. You know, so you want to write a novel and you can seem to never be able to get down to doing it. Maybe the truth of it is that you just haven't got a novel in you, and that's what the procrastinating is about.
It can very well be the case, Amanda, that, you know,
you've got an unrealistic sense.
Yeah, and I think that we all need to be very, I guess, we need to set goals that we can actually achieve. Because if we go and set goals that are really unachievable, then we will have all of these beliefs that come up of, oh, I can't do that, or this is too difficult, or it's an overwhelming task. And that just leads to a sense of procrastination, sometimes even paralysis.
And it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It does, exactly. We manifest exactly what it is that we believe. So it's not to say that we can't write the book, but it's perhaps to say, let's just plan some chapters. Let's just start on one small aspect of it and see how it goes.
This is Life Matters. I'm Amanda Smith, speaking with psychologist Dr. Charlotte Keating about self-sabotage, what it is, why you do it, and more importantly, we'll get on to how to stop it. Be good to get your input too. Have you noticed sort of self-destructive patterns in your life? What would you like to change? You can get in touch. Perhaps if you've broken the cycle of doing that in your life, love to hear from you. There's Facebook. You can search us on ABC RN Life Matters for Facebook. Charlotte, let's talk about common sorts of self-sabotaging behaviours that people do in relationships. So what have you seen?
Look, in relationships, it's a really common place where we do see these particular patterns that emerge that really no longer serve us particularly well in the way in which we relate to people. And, you know, what's really important to notice in these sort of relationship conflicts, if you like, is that usually it's in a situation where you're feeling quite emotional. It might be where you have a particular need that hasn't been met, and you might otherwise assume that your partner should know that it's something that they should be meeting or in some way that it is in fact their fault that something's happened. Now, when you feel emotional like that, you can push a button. You can start a fight. You can have, you know, escalating words and things in that moment, and the emotionality of the situation will end up escalating it to a point of perhaps no return, when if it were that we were sort of calm and we sought what the truth was, the hurt that we're experiencing, perhaps the need that went unmet, and in fact, was this actually a need that went unmet in our childhood way of relating? Is this actually our childhood programming that in the moment, in that conflict, in that relationship is being triggered, or is it actually something that has happened that the other person intended? But more often than not, when we're feeling upset in those relationship dynamics, there can be something going on for us that's from our childhood programming rather than just what's present in that dynamic or the situation that occurred. But very common ways this manifests is sort of global statements of, you always do this.
Oh, yeah.
When in fact it can be a very sort of small example, or just, you know, 10% of the time something might happen, but it will set something off. Or if you know that by pressing a particular button in a relationship that you will set off a chain of events that will, you know, create no talking for a couple of days.
And you sort of can't stop yourself.
You can't stop yourself. Well, it feels like you can't stop yourself doing it, doesn't it, Amanda? And I guess, as I said before at the beginning, it's about having a really strong emotional reaction sometimes and believing that because it feels very painful that it's true, when in fact there may very well be a different explanation for what actually went on.
All right, so how do you counsel people to understand all that and break away from those sort of patterns?
I think the first thing, or the most important thing, is an awareness. Because an awareness of these patterns occurring allows you to acknowledge it and take some responsibility for it. You know, when I talk to people, many times they can sort of come to me and say, oh, look, you know, I always do this and I don't know why I do it. But sometimes they can, or equally, I guess, they can say, this always happens to me and I don't know why. And it can very well feel like that until there's been some reflective listening to be able to sort of elicit, well, in fact, this is happening quite often and I notice this is how I sort of deal with it each time. Maybe I'll try something different in that moment, and you see the outcome change as a result. And then you say, oh, okay, I can actually see that I've got a contribution perhaps to the problem, but an opportunity to change the outcome.
Yeah. So this isn't just randomly always happening to me.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, what about at work? How do people sabotage their careers and why?
Oh, there's a whole range of ways in which people can perhaps engage in those patterns of sabotage. But the most obvious ones is unreliability, for example. So you could be a highly capable worker, good at your job, but you might sleep in a fair bit, you might not turn up on time, or you might fail to prepare. You might, you know, not prepare adequately for a really big meeting or board presentation that you've got to do. And in that way, set up a bit of a pattern where you're perceived perhaps as untrustworthy or in fact unreliable, when it's the very opposite of what you're wanting to be perceived as. It can also occur.
So again, what's driving those behaviours though?
Well, oftentimes, say for example, an important presentation or meeting that you have to show up at, it can be this idea of wanting to do a fantastic job, wanting to do a really good job and make sure that you've covered every single base, and the pressure that you feel to perfect that might actually paralyze you from getting started in the first place, because it just feels so overwhelming and insurmountable. So in that situation, it's right up to the 11th hour before you actually manage to get it done.
Yes, all right. And okay, so again, your thoughts and advice about dealing with that, if you recognise that in yourself.
Yeah. And look, it's the same again for kids in the context of exams and things. You know, it's this desire to want to do well, but these beliefs about your capacities and your abilities to get the job done that can get in the way. So my suggestion is, how do you take the stress and the overwhelm out of it? How do you bring yourself back to a stable baseline where you can calmly plan out what has to get done and address some of perhaps the beliefs and thoughts that are getting in the way of you actually planning to get it done? So do some mindfulness. Go for a walk. Talk to somebody who can, you know, if it's in the work context, plan it out with you a little bit. Try and chip away at this so it seems a little bit less overwhelming, and write out perhaps what your beliefs are, how you're feeling, why it is emotionally arresting for you in that moment. And if at the basis of it is a belief that you can't do it, or it is impossible, or you simply don't have enough time, you know, ask yourself, well, I'm pretty sure that if I segmented or created this amount of time here that I could at least get started. And once you get started, you're able usually to find a bit of a flow.
It's true. It's the getting started.
Isn't it? Isn't it?
All right. Now, in another area that we've moved into a little bit, say you're on a health kick and you've eaten well for a few days and then I don't know why, but, you know, at some point you just say, oh, stuff this, I'm going to have some pizza. That's self-sabotage, right? I mean, why do we do that?
Oh, look, sometimes you're just allowing yourself to do exactly what you want to do in the moment, aren't you, Amanda? But look, I think, bringing it back to this idea of patterned behaviour and of things getting in the way of our goals, oftentimes we can set far too strenuous plans for healthy living and things that simply are not sustainable. And so we end up, our body just tells us we would like to do something, and so we break out and we do it. But oftentimes food, substances, you know, alcohol, those sorts of things can become fairly patterned ways of soothing ourselves when we feel stressed. It can become a bit of a vice that makes us feel a lot better. And although not necessarily a positive coping strategy, it's in fact potentially a self-sabotaging one, it can be a pattern that we get very used to feeling better in, and it's very easily accessible.
Mm. All right. Now, you talked a bit about, what you learn from childhood, from your parents. If your childhood programming sort of sets you up to be a bit self-sabotaging, what then as a parent should you be thinking about with your own children?
Absolutely. So, Amanda, I think the thing with children is that all parents are doing their absolute best. So I say that, you know, up front. But what you want to do is you want to try and shape the behaviour in a positive way, or reinforce the positive behaviours that you want to see, rather than focusing on behaviours that you don't want to see so often. Also, really important, focus on what it is about your children that you love and that you celebrate. So that's who they are, what their opinions are, what they're curious about, what, you know, their interests are, rather than on just what they can do or how they perform. Because if there's a lot of undue focus on how they perform and achievement, it can lead them to feel like they're defined, or their identity relates to what they can achieve. And if we feel like our identity relates to what we can achieve, it puts a lot of pressure on us in that moment to do it. Otherwise, if we don't do it, then we feel like we're nothing in that moment. So helping them to internalise a sense that they can get the job done, that they can have mastery. And I think above all else, and particularly important for relationships, is making sure that your children feel loved enough, that they don't have to chase your love, because this sets them up with the view that they're worthy of it in their future relationships.
Mm. And we have a text from Julie too, who agrees with you, Charlotte. She says, yes, it's often about our early attachment experiences. The procrastination is a defence against feeling the anxiety about the emotions it stirs up. Awareness is key to get to the bottom of the emotions. And look, I'd love to hear more from you too. I wonder if you've managed to break a cycle of self-sabotaging in your life at work, at home. If you'd care to share your story, there's Facebook. Charlotte Keating is a psychologist in Melbourne. She's an adjunct research fellow at Swinburne University of Technology. Charlotte, it's good to see you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Amanda.